All right. As we go at our breakneck pace of interviews at DubLab here, broadcasting from WNC, 91.5 North Carolina Public Radio. I'm Jasmine Blasco. I'm here with Ajay Ravi. DubLab is here broadcasting. We have our second guest on the show, Elliot Inman, slash Musical Circuits, I believe, is your sort of the name you give to your general creative practice. Is
absolutely, absolutely. And what we're going to be doing here at MoogFest over the next couple of days, and actually I'm doing four workshops. We're doing one workshop every day. And it is basically doing breadboarding some musical circuits, some very classic kind of things that people do with, you know, TTL and CMOS chips, where we've got a hex inverter chip, very standard kind of circuit. We're going to set it up on the breadboard. We're going to, a little resistor capacitor, set it up so that we have some timing. And we're going to make some lovely and or frightening sounds coming out of a piezo element sitting there on the table.
That sounds very up my alley.
Yeah, powered by a 9-volt battery. You know, of course, the classic power supply of all, modern electronics. So, and we're going to do those one a day, every day for the next 4 days.
Oh, fantastic. And is this the workshop that is called Pencil Synth?
It is. It's musical, I think it's musical pencil synth make and take. And so that's a little thing we ought to mention, that folks who come to the workshop will walk away with everything we do. So they've got a breadboard, they've got the chips, they've got some capacitors, resistor, they've got a potentiometer, the piezo element, even the 9-volt battery. And we package the whole thing up in a lovely custom brown paper lunch bag.
Right.
And you walk out the door with it. One of the things I guess we're doing is a little different. So I think a lot of folks have made circuits like that. It's a very common kind of thing.
Right.
And we hope to get people who have never done anything in electronics. So if you're listening, you've never done anything with electronics, you've never touched a breadboard, you don't know what a breadboard is, come see me.
You're most welcome to come.
We would love to have you, because we're going to start at the very start. We're all going to work together. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. But it's one of the things that's a little bit different is it's the musical pencil itself. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, obviously there are a lot of different synthesizers. You can think of a stylophone, a lot of different kind of things where folks have some kind of pointing device that's used to modulate the frequency and you know, produce other musical effects. And just the slightest little twist on that is basically we've got a classic number 2 pencil, which, of course, is often used for evil in our country. You know, every kid has had to take a standardized test with a number 2 pencil.
I see, yeah.
That should scare you. But we basically drill a hole right through the pencil, run a little wire through it.
Oh, I see. And then it's because it's it's conductive.
It is. The lead is conductive. And we set it up so that you can actually draw a sound with the pencil itself.
Fantastic.
And so folks will walk out with a pencil and all the rest, everything they need to have fun at home as well.
So that's fantastic. There's a question I want to ask you in terms of, sort of general methodology with sort of creative technologies.
Yeah.
Essentially having to do with, there's sort of a two-pronged question. On one hand, because you were telling me about the pencil, I got very sort of reminded of the Xenakis, what was it called, Ubik? He developed an interface that was also drawing-based,
I believe. Absolutely, yes, yes, yes. And so there are other, absolutely.
And so that just came to mind as you know, for somebody who's a mathematician, who's a sort of a highly abstract thinker, to want to develop this very democratic tool in which the sort of the guiding metaphor for sound is actually drawing and visual. So that's quite sort of, to leave that to one side, perhaps return to, that's quite fascinating in your approach.
It is. It is, absolutely. And you can probably remember some of the classic synths where folks would draw a waveform.
Right.
And then the waveform, you know, would play out. And that was a beautiful way to do it with a stylus.
Right.
The other thing is, too, I don't know if anybody remembers, you know, this was some of the first things people were doing on a Mac. So if you go back to the days of a Mac Plus, which is ancient technology now, so we're talking, mid-'80s, whatever
bit,
it is,
remember,
mid-'80s. Yeah. I guess it was, believe it or not, one of the classics, Deluxe Music Construction Set, which was one of the first software programs for composing using the computer.
Kidding.
Had MIDI, and then there was a deluxe recorder that went along with it. They eventually became Electronic Arts, and started to focus on, you know, more profitable things like making, I don't know, simulated football games and things
that. Of course,
They had an interesting future, but way back with Deluxe Music Construction Set, you could click a little button, it was almost hidden, and then it would pop up a situation where you could essentially draw with the mouse a waveform.
Right.
Now, at that time, it was 8-bit.
Right, yeah.
But, and that sounds, I know that sounds like ancient technology, but I will just say, if you're a person sitting there in front of a Mac Plus, and it's 1987, and you're sitting in your dorm room, and you just drew a waveform, and the computer played it for you,
Yeah.
Even if it's only 8-bit, I mean, you just feel like you just fell into nirvana.
Of course.
I mean, you were high as a kite. You could not be happier.
Yeah, it's a groundbreaking moment, of course, personally.
It is. And so that technology always, I mean, I think you gave a good example. We have new technology. When it first comes out, very few people have it, or it's insanely expensive, right?
Right.
And eventually it becomes less expensive. Hopefully a lot of people buy it. The price goes down, becomes easier to manufacture and all the rest. And then you get that technology out to a large number of people who are able to afford it. And when you finally get it out to a large number of people and you democratize that technology, then cool stuff happens.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because people who would never have gotten it before, people who have the imagination, maybe they have the imagination more than the technical skills, when they get a hold of it, they just start to do wild and crazy things, which I think is very consistent with, you know, what happened with Moog and the synthesizer.
Absolutely.
You know, originally, just insanely expensive. You know, you'd have to be a university to buy one or, you know, a famous recording artist.
Yeah.
But by the time they got it down to the mini Moog, and then they just democratized that. And then you see people did just incredible things with it. Incredible things. And they're still doing incredible things, you know, 30, 40 years later.
Without a doubt. It's interesting because as an educator, it sort of does trace that route which you're talking about. That's something that used to be a tool that you would buy, like an enormous piece of research equipment.
Yeah.
Is now something, you know, open-ended platforms like Arduino.
Absolutely.
Workshops like you might conduct.
I love those. I've done a bunch of those. We hook it up. So I can make now for basically, you know, $30. You can create your own custom MIDI controller, right?
Yep.
And on my website, musicalcircuits.com, I demonstrate a number of different things that you can do with it beyond the standard drum machine,
right?
Or sequencer.
So that's what I wanted to ask you about, because I saw you term it the postmodern drum machine.
That's right. Sort of,
and I was really intrigued by that. There's a question that you sort of borrow from a text, which is, how does time function in postmodern music?
Absolutely.
Of course, enormous question, but I was kind of curious to hear about sort of perhaps an initial answer that you may have to that or a further explanation of that question, perhaps.
Well, and the book that I cite is Jonathan D. Kramer's, postmodern text. He's got a number of different ones, but Jonathan D. Kramer is the critic, and he writes on postmodern music. And one of the things, he focused a great deal on time. He's passed away, unfortunately. He died at, you know, fairly young age. Sorry to lose him. But he focused on the idea of time. And the main thing that he pointed out was that musicians, time is no longer just a structural element.
Right.
Time is not just something that's happening on the x-axis that just happens to mark, you know, the passage of a moment from one note to the next.
Right. That a discrete event.
Discrete,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
That musicians are directly manipulating time. So instead of playing a frequency, or instead of modulating a resonance, or instead of, you know, triggering a particular envelope, you're actually directly manipulating the time. Is this faster, slower, instead of a steady tempo? And I think, too, and you know, Moog and all the things we do, I mean, we all love dance music. Don't tell me you don't like dance music, because you like some kind of dance music.
Well, and on Dublab, we like lots of kinds
exactly.
of it, but lots of it. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean,
absolutely.
Some people are like, I don't like dance music.
You depends
like
what
dance
they
music.
Dance to.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You may like polkas. You may not like dubstep, but you like some kind of dance music. But the one thing that is true is that not all music has to be dance music.
True.
And so much music that we think of as not being dance music actually was. So you think about the classic waltzes. Well, that was dance music.
Yes, true.
That came out of choreography, an expression, a physical expression that was dance. And the musical structure was built around that. What happens when you just abandon that? When you're no longer worried at all about whether this measure is exactly in the same tempo as the last?
Right.
And it's the antithesis of, and I love drum machine again, love drum machines, simulated drum machines, you know, drum machines are wonderful things, but it's the antithesis of a drum machine.
Right.
Instead of asking you to keep a steady state, I'm saying, let's burn the clock.
Right.
Let's tear the hands off the clock. Let's tear the numbers off the clock, not worry about time, get in there and manipulate time. And it's fascinating to read Jonathan Kramer's stuff on this. And I know that's a little odd because, you know, one of the things I do realize is people find inspiration from all different kinds of sources. A lot of us still find inspiration in, spirituality or in nature, or an event in their lives happens and that inspires them to write something. Sometimes you're inspired by the technology. You get your hands on a new synth, a new sound, whatever, new controller, and you start to create things that you've you know, you had no idea was even in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
But another thing is, and this is a little odd, because Kramer's essentially a musicologist. And it may seem odd, but sometimes I, myself, find inspiration in things like pure philosophy.
Yes.
Or musicology.
Right.
Which is a weird way to come at it, because not a lot of people do. There's not a lot of people who say, you know, oh, I was reading this musicology textbook, and,
right.
Well, and that led me to, you know, reconsider how I'm writing music, you know.
No, but it's quite interesting because, in fact, yes, you know, on the one hand, it would be surprising somebody, let's say, stereotypically interested in dance music to have sort of a more cerebral, intellectual, or kind of reflective sort of approach to their music making or listening. But at a certain point, as dance music matures, also electronic music matures, that becomes the only way into a new form or new thought, which is why I think it's actually quite apt what you're saying and very relatable, I mean, to me anyway.
Well, I think a lot of modern dance music, EDM and things like that, is going in that direction anyway, but it's doing it in a funky kind of way. It's doing it by speeding up the tempo and speeding up notes until they blur together, and then time loses meaning.
Right.
Now, the other side of it is more, I could think of Indian music with a raga.
Absolutely.
Which may move so slowly, or you think of Lamont Young, some of the abstract, you know, avant-garde composers.
Yeah.
They used to be avant-garde. Now they're the historically avant-garde composers.
Of course.
You know, Lamont Young, or even some of the folks who have, what's Black MIDI?
Oh,
that's
sure.
What Black MIDI is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a blur of sound that completely disconnects you from the time and the tempo of the piece, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's fascinating to me. I'm interested in the idea of time.
Right.
And how we can kind of escape.
Right.
Escape from the burden of maintaining the tempo.
No,
you know?
I so agree. I mean, I feel like this is sort of this encounter of, like, you know, chronometric time in my life is sort of everything is which time zone am I in, you know, the timeliness of response to emails.
Yeah.
So.
And it doesn't exist.
Of course.
Time
of course
doesn't
not.
Exist. There's
of course
no, there's not. No, there's no, you know,
but this is
as we say, Einstein, you know, time bends at the edge of space because time is defined as our relationship to a large mass.
Right.
I mean, time is not a thing that is in nature. It's a thing that we've, you know, derived from nature to better understand our lives. But, you know, just for a little while, and again, I'm not saying everybody should just completely abandon tempo,
right?
In the same way that I'm not a radical, you know, serialist, you know, saying that everybody should, you know, abandon tonality,
and we
should, you know, that's not the case I'm making. But it is kind of fun to experiment, and if you just kind of let yourself go for a little while, and say, what if we no longer worry about playing? We're going to play together, but we're not going to worry about everybody hitting it on the downbeat.
Right.
And James Brown's not going to turn around and point at us and dock us $20 because we didn't hit the mark.
We missed
you know?
It. Yeah, yeah.
It's cool. We're all just going to float for a little while.
True.
And let it go. And, you know, I think that's the workshops we're doing here are very basic. As I said, it should be a lot of fun. I hope it will be. We're working with some very basic circuits to create an oscillator to make some sounds and do the same thing. But in truth, the same kind of spirit goes into the workshops that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that, you know, we're not going to go in and try to reproduce a mini Moog on a breadboard, you know. And I am not, you know, Alan Perlman, I'm not going to try to perfect pitch with a piezo, you know, element.
Right.
We're just going to have some fun, kind of let things go a little bit and, you know, see what kind of things we can produce together. See what kind of creative experience we can have when we let down our guard. Maybe just you know, jump in.
But this is fantastic. I think this idea of the authorship of common time in that sense,
absolutely,
and interrogations about that in an educational context.
There's a whole other philosophical context where it is basically a rejection of authoritarianism. I mean,
that's what I'm hearing. Yeah,
yeah. And I'm not a political, you know, composer, but. But I do appreciate the idea that, you know, occasionally it helps to call into question who's in charge, even if the only person you're calling into question is the conductor standing there with that baton slapping it at you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I have one last question for you, because this is, and we should continue this conversation informally also around the festival, because there's a lot more going on.
Well, and we're just starting out. It's just, you know, Thursday afternoon, so we're just getting going. I'm looking forward to talking to you and everybody else here.
Absolutely. But since we're at Moogfest and sort of such a, there's also a technology fetish implicitly here, and I'm one of them. I'm a fan of certain technological instruments. I wanted to have a sort of a broad question for you of what do you have a sort of cherished piece of technology? Is there that one thing, either the musical piece of gear, Holy Grail, or that one thing in your life you're like, man, I love that thing, which, you know, eats up battery or resources or, you know.
Wow. That is tough.
Or several. I mean, you know.
That is a tough question. I don't think there is one.
It's reassuring that it's tough to me, actually, that you say that. Actually.
You know what is true? I'll tell you this, and this is kind of an odd thing to say, but I am going to tell you, and I think this is actually true, that I can remember every single keyboard I ever played anywhere.
Oh, wow.
And I mean a practice piano in a junior college, the Hammond organ that was in a friend's house when I was 10 years old. I can remember playing some of the Moog Source, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I remember where I was, believe it or not, in like a bargain basement country auction house.
Wow.
It was sitting there and a little dusty. If I had been smart, I'd have, you know, paid the guy cash. And
right. Ran away with it immediately, yeah.
You know, one of the realistic Mini Moogs.
Oh, wow.
You remember that one? That's and there's one over there in the exhibit over there. But one of the ones that was a knockoff, you know, working with realistic, with Radio Shack.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a music store in Great Falls, Montana, I sat on the floor and played that thing. So I guess I probably am the worst case. Not only do I have a fetish,
right?
I have a rather, dare I say, obsessive memory for that particular lust.
That's great. That's so great. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for stepping in, and I'll see you around the festival tomorrow and the next following days, probably.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you so much.
Yeah.